Hey there, this is Yarrow. Welcome to my podcast, the Yarrow Podcast. So this is going to be really casual. I wanted to basically share a lot of what's going on behind the scenes with my businesses. It's a rainy day here in Montreal, Canada, so I've just switched the camera on. I recently got back from some travels. I was in February, Costa Rica for the very first time, and Mexico for the very first time, as well as a brief stop in Miami on the way down for a conference. I was at a one-day event hosted by Anthony Pompliano from the Pomp Podcast. You might know him, kind of known as a Bitcoin guy, but his podcast is definitely turning into a more varied discussion place. All kinds of interesting people showing up on his show. So I went down there to Miami, spent a weekend there. I was with my friends Jay and Francesca. They were also attending the conference. And then I zipped down to Costa Rica, met up with my girlfriend Alex, excuse me, and we explored Costa Rica for 2 weeks, which was absolutely amazing. What a fun place. So much nature. I probably will do maybe a video, a podcast, or at least the blog post on that trip. I've got a lot of photos I want to share. Obviously, I was working while I was traveling as well. Not too much. For those who may not be familiar with me, I've been a digital nomad for 20 plus years now. In fact, I was a digital nomad before digital nomad was a term. For me, it was just this idea of traveling with your business, which was kind of like the primary goal when I became an entrepreneur, was to try and find a business that I could travel with, earn a significant income. And thankfully, the internet came along at the right time. I was 18. The internet was going through its first boom in the late 1990s. Which meant it was much easier to build a business you could take with you while you travel. Certainly hard to, build a business that might be a restaurant or some kind of retail business. You have to get it up and running, really managed by other people before you can consider leaving. It was actually quite rare. But with an internet business, you can still be involved, but you can take it with you. So it's easier to get started and more quickly get out there. So not doing a podcast today about being a digital nomad or remote work, but it certainly is a big part of my life. And, the business I am going to talk about today, Inbox Done, which is my agency, was something I was running while I was in Costa Rica, while I was in Mexico, two places for the first time. In particular, in Mexico, I didn't do as much holidaying, touristing, more just sort of staying in the one area in Playa del Carmen. And I was working. I'd go to the beach. I'd go to a coffee shop. I'd eat really amazing vegetarian food where I was staying. So I ate a lot of vegetarian food. And I'd work, which was really nice, do some writing. I worked a lot on a new project that I've got coming out in the next month or two as well, starting to write some articles for that. But yeah, amazing. But I really want to dive in today to the topic of this podcast, which is all about the growth of my agency, InboxDone.com. So just a brief background story. I don't want to go into the long story. This agency was started behind the scenes. Really, it was about six years ago. It was more of a test project then. Around 2017 is when we really took it as a serious business. I shouldn't say that. We were serious from day one. 2017 was when we actually decided to start investing in things that cost money, which makes it more serious. We built a website. We registered as a company. All those grown-up things you do when you know your business is actually going somewhere. So since then, we've been on this amazing journey growing InboxDone.com, which is an email management and calendar scheduling virtual assistant service. It's been a fun ride. I've never grown an agency to this size. It's now a seven-figure business. The only place where I made seven figures prior was in the information product space, so selling coaching and digital products and things like that. So it's been nice to essentially build a services business and get to that level. Obviously, you want to keep growing, and it is my main source of income right now. But it is run by a team with my co-founder who, coordinates the delivery of the service with all of our amazing people who do email management for people. I'm the CMO. I do the marketing, which is why I'm very qualified to do this topic for you today, which is basically how we use content to grow our agency into a seven-figure business and five tactics specifically that worked. I'm reading this out because I have a blog post on my blog. You can go to yarrow.blog. I'll put a link in the show notes for it as well. And you can essentially go through the text version of what I'm about to share with you in the podcast, in the video stream. But I wanted to do a companion video because I think it'll be helpful to give you a bit more context behind the scenes, a little bit more storytelling from me. So I'm going to dive straight in. So bear in mind, this is from about 5-6 years of actual working on the business. So each of these techniques wasn't applied from day one. In fact, I'm kind of going to go in chronological order here. So to start with, email newsletter was technique number one, email newsletter. Now, I say that, and it's a little bit not really fair to say that this was a starting point that was brand new. It was an advantage I already had in place. So I had an email newsletter because I, as you most likely know, have a blog and I've had a podcast and I've been a content creator for many, many years. And a big part of that was bringing people to an email newsletter. Now, that newsletter was used predominantly as a place to share content around the topics of how to make money with blogs, how to set up email funnels. I occasionally shared interviews from my podcast, but it was all around that information marketing subject. However, it's also a great place where I could test new ideas. And there were many times over the many years with that newsletter, I still have it, where I would essentially do a little test run to see if a product would get some traction just from my nice little audience. I say little, it's not a massive newsletter. It's not a small newsletter. It's probably 6,000 to 8,000 actually paying attention people, with maybe 2,000 to 3,000 who are really clicking links and interacting. I mean, the actual size of the subscription base kind of sits at around 20,000 now. It's been as high as 100,000, but I removed a lot of dead subscribers over the years, and I've really brought it down to the core group. It doesn't grow nearly as fast as it used to either. It's kind of I won't say dying, but it's a business that, because I've been focused on Inbox Done, the newsletter and the blog that fed the newsletter hasn't been a core focus of mine. So I haven't been out there trying to, you know, revamp things, find new sources of newsletter subscribers. It's just been kind of puttering along, and I still write newsletters. I have a great sequence there, free content. I share my best blog posts. So when it came to the launch of Inbox Done, or not even the launch, really the behind the scenes experiment, I use a newsletter to get our first customers. So really simple. I had this newsletter. I had an idea for a business. I had a co-founder ready to deliver the service of email management for potential clients. And I went to my newsletter and said, hey, would you like to have the same people who manage my email manage yours? I'm working with one of my email managers. In fact, my co-founder, before she was my co-founder, was one of the people who managed my inbox for that teaching business, that coaching business. So great experience. I could trust her. I knew she knew how to do the job. And it was a perfect combination to test this idea. So we did. And sending that email brought up about 5 interested people. 3 showed up for phone calls and 2 signed up for the very first version of the Inbox Done service. Now, back then, we charged about $1,000 a month. And it was really an experiment. We didn't know if that was enough money to make a profit. We didn't know if that was enough money to pay people to deliver the service to the quality we needed. Claire, being my co-founder, she was going to deliver the service at first. So she was essentially going to be both a co-founder and a worker in the experiment. And it worked. So we got those few test clients. It continued to be, and when I say it, I mean the newsletter continued to be a source of a couple more clients, not many. It wasn't like, you know, you hear these stories of people who launch through their YouTube channel or their social media or their newsletter, and they've instantaneously got a 7-figure business because all they needed was that newsletter or that YouTube channel to send them hundreds of new clients to a brand new agency or a brand new business. Not the case with mine. Completely makes sense. My newsletter subscribers is not the target market. I have a lot of beginner people who don't necessarily have enough money or a large enough business to justify hiring assistants to help with their email. So I never expected to get hundreds, but I was glad to get a few customers over that sort of first 2 years. And in fact, the newsletter became even better for hiring. We used it also as our first source of, well, second source really, of new hires as well. So it was the starting point. It was our growth 101, let's test the idea, and got us beyond test to actually, this is going to be a business. We're going to pursue that. So fast forward to that sort of second year after the test, we, as I said before, got serious and built the website. Now, this is where I come in. This is my main contribution, I think, to the, you know, the starting point and the growth. Obviously, the newsletter is my asset, so we couldn't do it without that. But in terms of my labor, this is where I step in and I built the website. In particular, I write the copy. So the copy is hugely important. These are the words that are going to be on the website. It's twofold. It's sales. So it's what brings in a customer. A person lands on the website, reads these words, sees the important points, the triggers, the social proof, the case studies, the list of features, the offer, the pricing, all these things that go into a good landing page, a good sales page, just a good website. And then they decide to book a call and hopefully become a customer. So it is a very key stepping point in a sales process. For me, that was an easy thing to do. Obviously, it's something we changed over time, but I was able to sit down and essentially write version 1.0 of our website, the headline, each of the different content blocks, put them all together, handed that over to my web designer, and she's worked with me for many years as well on various projects, put together a WordPress website, used my copy, we created some content blocks. It's not too complicated a process. What I do when I design websites is often I will just, you know, do research, look at other websites, other elements I like on those websites, and I'd say to Carly, let's use this sort of type of element, this kind of design feature as a starting point for our own website. You combine it all together, all these different content blocks, and then you've got, you know, a ready to go website. So we did that. And also, equally as important as the sales part of a website is the organic SEO, search engine optimization. So essentially, we made sure there was a blog component of the website from day one, which of course, you're using WordPress, you're going to have a blog, you're going to have a place to put posts and pages. So pages are more permanent sort of content pieces that are not part of a blog stream. They're permanent pages like an about page and a contact page and a pricing page. And then you've got your blog post, which might be more, you know, organic. Some of it will be teaching content. Some of it might be updates. You've got a blog stream. So WordPress has all that by default. And as I finished the website main sort of sales pages, which include the, you know, the homepage, the about page, contact page, those sorts of things, I also began to plan out an organic strategy, which meant putting together key pieces of content based on keywords. So this is an ongoing process. We're still doing this today, but I want to point out this was started all the way back in that sort of first, second year of the launch of the company. And I note that because SEO is a long strategy. It's one of the best because it's free. You know, once you start ranking in Google, it brings free traffic, free customers, but it takes time because you have to produce the content, you have to hit the right keywords, and you have to build your links to build your authority. And that's what I started doing all the way back in that first year, my first 18 months of the company. So I won't go into, you know, deep into SEO. Other than I knew we needed some key core pages, I was doing competitive analysis, seeing who was ranking for phrases that I thought were important to Inbox Done, just the general broad executive and virtual assistant industry, who were the biggest players. I was studying them. I would listen to podcasts from the founders of our competition or even our indirect competition. I just do keyword research. I'd do searches, see what was ranking. And that gave me a starting point to produce the initial content for the site. So I started that myself and I continue to do that. It was a big part of my job in the early years was to write these articles. I also started to build links. This was something that was easy at first. I could directly link from my blog, which has some authority. It's quite an old site. And point links to the new inboxdone.com website to sort of boost our rankings, get us started. That alone was not enough to get us, you know, in the top 10 even. It might get us on the second page of results for certain key phrases, maybe the first page, you know, in position 9 or 10 of the search rankings. So frankly, that's not going to do anything for us, but it was a sign that we were getting into the search engines. We existed. Now is a case of increasing and improving that. So just to recap. So number one was the email newsletter. That's our first source of customers, first source of growth. Number two was the website itself, which obviously is a sales tool first, and then an SEO tool second. So the SEO part in particular became a significant source of audience, but it takes time. There was a lot of other things I did for growing links. You know, some of that's very manual, very organic. You approach someone you know who has a website, you ask to contribute some content, you do so. A few months later, that article goes live and you got a link back to your website. There was another thing, though, that worked really well for us, which is actually the third of the five marketing techniques that worked for us to grow a seven-figure agency. That's podcast marketing. So podcast marketing was an interesting choice for us. I'm well aware, obviously, I'm here doing a podcast. YouTube is now a great place for podcasts as well, hence I'm creating a video version of this as well. But I didn't see it just as a place to grow an audience. So podcast marketing in this case is really more about podcast guesting, which means appearing on other people's podcasts as an interview guest to talk about, you know, your subject, but it obviously relates to what your business does as well. So initially I did this just because it was a low hanging fruit option to bring us in potential new customers, which meant going to all the people I knew who had podcasts, who I had an existing relationship with, and just asking if I could come on their show, do an interview about delegating email, building systems, being a digital nomad, however I could, you know, pitch the story, the hook, the angle, and then mention that I am the co-founder of Inbox Done. And if you want us to manage your email, help you with this system building process, we're available to do that. So I did that, and I got on some good shows. James Schramko is a good friend from down in Australia. I went on his show. John Lee Dumas from the Entrepreneur on Fire podcast was definitely the standout. So I had known John from the start of his show. He actually had me as his eighth guest ever for the very, very start of Entrepreneurs on Fire. And he got on fire. You know, his podcast exploded. It's a huge podcast today. He's made, I think, plus $20 million primarily from this business. A lot of that is from podcast advertising. And he was the best, or his podcast was certainly the best raw source of new customers. Again, though, this is, you know, not enough to build a business on, but he sent us two or three, maybe four customers from the interview I did with him. That's amazing. That's especially amazing during the early days. That was, you know, helping us probably grow by 25% just from that one podcast, because we were starting from such a low base. You know, we had six customers. He helped us get three more. Oh, wow, that's 50% growth. You know, that's huge. I can't remember, it was a long time ago, but that was definitely a proof point that podcast guesting worked. But there's a lot of shows I went on and continue to go on, didn't bring in any direct customers. The majority by far never bring in customers. However, a secondary benefit of doing podcast interviews is you get incoming links. So this is what I love. I love compound marketing. I love compound anything, compound interest, you know, compound personal wealth. Compound marketing means when one marketing technique that in itself has value also creates a secondary benefit of compounding another marketing technique. In the case of podcast interviews, podcast guesting, you also build incoming links, which helps with your SEO. So if you have an SEO strategy where you're producing content to go after keywords, by doing podcast interviews, you're getting new links coming from those podcasts when they publish on their website, on their blogs, pointing back to your business website, which then helps the authority increase. It's not a huge amount. You know, these are a lot of small podcasts. Their sites don't have a lot of authority. But when you have this sort of consistent, you're getting on a two or three shows every month, these new episodes are being released, new links are coming in. It just shows what you want to show. Your website is something that's gaining in popularity. You're getting featured, and thus you're going to start improving in the rankings. So, you know, I can't tie in exact results from saying, you know, I went on these shows and I got this much of an improvement in our search rankings, but I certainly saw a gradual improvement in our ranking to the point today where we rank very highly for some of our most competitive search terms. And I think a big part of that is because of podcast guesting. A big part of that's the other link building things I did, some of them manual, some of them, you know, my own blog. Some of it's just time, just building enough links over time. So everything just slowly gets better. So all of that matters. The great thing about podcast marketing is I was getting the benefit of talking about my business. I was able to build incoming links. We occasionally would get some direct customers. Sometimes even the person who I was being interviewed by, the host of the podcast, would sign up as a customer. I love that because they were obviously the person learning the most. I was talking to them for an hour. They were hearing me tell the story about delegating my email, talking about how much of a benefit you get. How is it even possible? How can you hand over email to assistants? all the things we do. It's kind of like a mini sales pitch for our business. And a few times, I think at least two times I can remember, the host would sign up as a customer almost immediately after they do a sales call, and away you go. So that's the third of the five marketing techniques I'm talking about. So again, newsletters to get us started, the website and SEO to build some long-term source of traffic and sales, podcast marketing as a source of direct customers, but also just as important, building our incoming links and authority. And I should point out today too, this is more of a recent benefit. A lot of podcasts, like this one you're listening to now, have a YouTube component as well. So YouTube being the second biggest search engine, it's a great place to have additional content appear. So now you're getting the YouTube appearance as a guest, probably a link, hopefully in the notes, the description of the YouTube video. They're linking back to your website. If they're serious, they've got their own website as well where they publish an article, the show notes, probably embed the YouTube video, release the audio of the podcast, link to your website in their show notes. And then, of course, you've got the podcast itself, the content going out on audio and video that people can listen to and watch. So it's kind of a three-way, you know, three hits if it's a really great podcast. So I'm a big fan of podcast marketing. And I hired an agency. I should mention that. Podcastconnection.org or Podcast Connections. I can never get that right. Is it an S? Yes, it is an S. Podcastconnections.org. My good friends over there, Raymond, he's running it at the moment. So if you want to go on podcasts, check out podcastconnections.org. They can help you do that. Number four. So moving on to number four, this is the second last of the five things we did. Google paid ads. So this came in later in our growth journey. And honestly, it was a mistake that I waited so long to test Google Ads. I say that because it's logical. We were starting to get our best source of leads from Google Organic, and that makes sense that you would add a Google paid component to that. Part of the reason for my delay was just not having familiarity with the Google paid ad system and my reluctance to learning a new ad platform. I've been turned away by trying to figure out, say, Facebook ads all by myself, and I always delegate that task to specialist Facebook people. But with Google Ads, I decided to give it a go myself. Now, before I did Google Ads, I did Twitter paid advertising and LinkedIn paid advertising. They both really didn't do anything for us. There was a little result from Twitter. Twitter, we certainly got some eyeballs onto our ads. We even had a person sign up as a customer, but they didn't last very long. So it really wasn't a meaningful outcome. They signed up and then they canceled, I think, within 3 months. Turned out not to be a great result. LinkedIn ads, no result from that. Really was a very small budget. I had a couple hundred dollars in free credit, which I played with. However, LinkedIn and Twitter were both really easy to get up and running with. So in some ways, that actually gave me encouragement that I could probably get up and running with Google Ads myself, at least for the starting point. And I also felt comfortable with the idea of creating the campaigns because I was now getting very aware of what keywords were working organically for us, which was something I could then translate into the keywords we use for our paid ads. It's one of the beautiful things about Google. Excuse me, you've got that combination of seeing your organic results and where the traffic is coming from, and then you can use that to apply it to paid ads and vice versa. If you start with paid ads or when you're running both, you can see what paid ads are delivering results and then start to focus your organic on those keywords. So write articles about that content, create videos about those keywords, those topics, and then hopefully with your authority growing, you'll start to rank organically, which is exactly what happened to us. So for example, right now, our number one keyword, we both have a very top ranking for the paid Google result and the organic Google result, which means if you go and search for our number one keyword, depending where in the world you are, you will see our website show up twice on the homepage, maybe even three times. I think once I saw four times where we had the paid result, the YouTube video result, and then two different organic results as well. So it is pretty amazing that you can, once you get up and running, you can get that kind of outcome. So I jumped into paid Google Ads myself, and honestly, it took a while. I'd say I spent a year not just learning how to use the platform, like that was actually surprisingly quick, takes a bit of setup. You got to create your little ad units. You've got to do some split tests. We had a very small budget. We started with $500 a month, which was really just some of our excess cash flow. Like, we were finally producing some profits beyond paying ourselves and the team. I don't think I was taking any money myself. I know the first 2 or 3 years, I barely took any money out of the company myself. I just wanted to put it all back in. So this was me putting it back in. Instead of taking this $500 out myself, I wanted to spend it on Google Ads. So we did that. The problem with having that kind of budget is you can't really do things fast, because you quickly spend your $500 and you don't really learn much from that. You have to spend money to get enough exposure and enough clicks to understand what's working and what's not working. And I realized, and this is a big lesson for me from using Google AdWords, is a lot of the process is about eliminating the wrong keywords. So, wow, I had a huge list of words I wanted to rank for. You know, everything from the obvious, like email management, virtual assistants, executive assistants, get down to inbox zero. There was so many phrases similar to that, combinations of that. And then I didn't realize, as these ads would go live, inbox zero is not actually producing the right kind of clicks. We're getting people looking for inbox zero chairs and inbox zero desks. And that's because there's actually a furniture company called Inbox Zero that sell desks and chairs and so on. So I had to eliminate, do negative keywords so that we never showed up for searches for a desk or a chair or a table. But that took a little while to learn. You know, it might be a month before I get the data back that, oh, wow, there's some negative or wrong search phrases here. So I would do that. And then I would do it again when I realized, oh, you know, when I type in email management, it's bringing up software tools, things like front.com. There's a whole bunch of them out there that are basically tools for managing multiple inboxes, giving you more control over your email. But that's a different search than looking for a human being who's going to actually reply to your emails, which is what we do. So I had to make sure that we're no longer appearing for what I believed were software-specific related searches. Some of that was easy to do because there would be like a keyword in there, you know, email management software, email management tools. And I would stop going after those phrases. I would do negative keywords, and that would help us to no longer spend money on the wrong keywords. And that's the most important point here. I should point out the reason why it's absolutely critical to get your negative keywords right and not go after the wrong phrases is because if you have the wrong phrases in there, you're spending money on bad clicks, which then means you're not spending that budget on the right clicks. So not only are you wasting money, but you're not even getting a chance to prove what actually works. So I spent at least a year, I would say, getting all the wrong keywords off of our campaign. And then that meant, at the very least, the budget was going to what I thought were the most targeted, the most likely to bring in a person looking for human beings to manage their email. And it did finally start to work. We started to see more customers. I would actually ask on sales calls, how did you find us? Some would say, I clicked an ad in Google. So, you know, you start to see the results. But I would say a year, 2 years later was when I finally felt comfortable. Okay, this is actually bringing in something. Now, you know, that's a long time and a lot of money, I guess, wasted, so to speak, to figure it all out. But that was something we had to go through. And at the end of the day, it was always the most effective channel for us based on the organic results we were getting. So I always, if it wasn't for that, if I didn't see us getting good organic results, customers coming from Google searches organically, I wouldn't have pursued paid ads for as long as I did, because I gave up on Twitter and I gave up on LinkedIn. And part of that was logical for us, because when you go to Google, you're searching for a product or a service. When you go to Twitter, when you go to LinkedIn, when you go to Facebook, you go to Instagram, when you see ads, you weren't searching for those ads. And maybe you were. Maybe you typed in a keyword and you were looking for like people talking about a pair of shoes. And of course, now you're seeing ads for those shoes. But most people don't go to Twitter or LinkedIn or Facebook or Instagram when they need to solve a problem, like I need to delegate my email to an assistant. They go to Google. Maybe now they're going to start saying they go to ChatGPT or other AI tools. That's possibly a transition they're going through right now. But you know, Google's going to have one of the best AI search assistants. So it's still going to be Google, I would say, for a long time coming. That was huge. So as I recap here, that's the top four, the first four core methods. Now, just to recap, newsletter, Then it was website, Google Organic, then it was podcast marketing, and then it was Google Paid. In between all of this, there were other experiments. I want to be clear, this is not a straight line. This is not me getting everything right or figuring everything out right, or you know, we're wasting money. We spent money besides LinkedIn and Twitter. We also sponsored events. We did, a cold outreach through email, which means basically creating lists of what we think are the appropriate types of people, business owners, and sending emails out to them directly. There's a lot of services, a lot of agencies that provide this service. We tested that. Frankly, it just failed. Again, I feel like this is because, well, A, it's a little bit spammy, but it does work for a lot of businesses. You know, you're sending cold emails, so there's always that sense of, I don't want this message, I didn't sign up for this. You're a salesperson, delete, stop annoying me. I get that. I've been on the receiving end of those emails every single day. I usually get a few of those. But it does work when there's a good fit of who you're targeting. And it's all about conversion rates. You send 100 emails, you get one customer, you keep doing that, you will. However, for us, it just didn't work because I believe anyway, the intent is not there. If you're not looking to solve the problem of too many emails, getting an email in your inbox that says, hey, we can help you with these emails, you're just not ready to pursue that. It might have been helpful for a little bit of exposure and awareness, but it wasn't good use of our very small marketing budget. So we had a philosophy, and I say we, I mean my co-founder and I, of essentially having the idea, hey, let's test something. Let's sponsor this conference. Let's try cold email outreach. Let's try Twitter. We'll devote a small budget to it, and we'll assess, is there positive, you know, some kind of result here that we can say it's working and we should keep doing this? Or is really it's not going in the right direction, in which case, shut it down. And when something did work, like for example with SEO, it worked. So we doubled down and we even tripled down. We hired a team. So we have a writer, we have a video producer, we're producing content every single week. We get the benefit of sharing that content on social media, although really it's mostly about Google Organic and YouTube Organic. And that's something we continue to do and continues to reinforce, you know, this strong channel for growth for us. But we don't continue to do Twitter. We don't continue to do LinkedIn, and we stop promoting or sponsoring events because this wasn't any traction there. Now, maybe if we keep throwing more and more money at those channels, eventually we might start getting some customers. But when you have a limited budget, you want to make sure you're spending it on the highest ROI or something you're seeing yourself growing and cementing over time. And I think organic Google search is one of the best things, especially for long-term growth. Which brings me to the fifth point, which I've kind of alluded to already there, which is compounding. So this is, I'm a little bit cheating here because this is more like I'm saying all marketing that worked for us worked, and the compound effect is what really brought us to seven figures. So what I am saying here is that when you start to find these channels that work, and it's probably going to be one or two, a lot of companies grow on one main channel and maybe a couple of other sub channels. In fact, I heard on a podcast just recently, and this was Harry Stebbings, 20 VC. He was interviewing the founder of ButcherBox, I believe it was. And he mentioned ButcherBox, but he also mentioned possibly Deel. I can't remember, was it Deel? Anyway, the comment was that for these venture-backed companies, usually there's one channel of distribution, one marketing channel that gets you to a $50 million ARR level. Like once it works, they just put all their money or a lot of their marketing dollars into this channel. It could be paid, it could be influencer marketing, it could be newsletters, whatever it is. They just, all their, a big chunk of their funding goes to that, gets them to 50 million. However, it seems to, for some reason, kind of run out of steam at that point, and you need to start looking for other channels. Usually that's when a secondary channel comes into it. So as Harry pointed out with some of these founders, commented that one channel to 50 million, two channels to get to that 100 million level, which is very important for venture-backed companies because at 100 million, they're probably getting that billion-dollar valuation, the unicorn status. Obviously, with my company, we're not venture-backed. We're 100% bootstrapped. You know, we just hit our seven-figure mark, so we're very happy with that result, but we're not even close to 50 million. That would be amazing. Be a much bigger company. But I feel like that kind of basic core idea of there's going to be one channel that really wins holds true for small bootstrap businesses as well, not just, you know, big venture-backed companies. So that's kind of what happened to us, but I also feel like compounding is a key part of this. And I say compounding not just for marketing, but compounding overall for your business. You're basically doing what I call, actually, I can't take credit for this at all, what the Japanese call Kaizen, which is incremental improvement. So it's something that came out of Japanese manufacturing. They have an assembly line, in particular with Toyota and cars, and they look to improve small improvements, 0.1%, 0.2%, but at multiple points along the assembly line, and that creates a magnification of results. There's a big improvement from small changes. That, I feel, is very true for us and what helped us to get to seven figures and bring in that many customers. So there's compounding that was obvious, like I said before. Podcast marketing helps with SEO because of the link building. But then there's compounding that isn't, you know, quite obvious, but you can sort of start to see it come into effect. One area in particular is referrals. A lot of businesses will start to point at referrals as one of their, if not their most significant source of new customers once things start growing, once they get product or service market fit. I don't think referrals is our largest source. In fact, I know it's not our largest source, but I started to see it become a bigger source. And you know what? Maybe one day I will say it is our biggest source of new leads. But what happens is your existing client base expands, which means it's more likely your existing clients will bring in friends, colleagues, just talk about your company, and thus you'll get a perfect source of new customer, a referred lead, which means there's trust, there's actual experience, you know, person who's using the service is recommending it, which is very powerful. So it's a great source of someone who's likely to become a customer. And we've certainly had that happen. We've had people come from our existing customers, whether it was a friend or a colleague. Sometimes it's their co-founder or another leader in their company. They'll just be adding someone from their existing company into our services. And that can be encouraged in other ways too. So as you can imagine, as you do more marketing, your budget increases, you're getting more exposure. Simple things, more clicks to your ad campaigns means, you know, even if you're not getting direct leads from that, there's more people discovering your service, possibly talking about it, possibly recommending it, maybe signing up down the line as well. Podcasting, same story. I'm appearing on more shows. I've got all this archive on all these different shows that people could listen to. And I've actually experienced this a couple of times where someone would book a discovery call, become a customer, and then they say during that discovery call, oh, I heard you on the something something podcast. And I did that 6 months ago, a year ago. So I don't know when they're listening. Maybe they listened when it came out and they made note of it, or maybe they're going back through someone's podcast archive. But there's that general increase in exposure, which leads to more likely a chance of a referral or a sign up just from awareness. So there's a form of compounding behind that. Marketing compounding marketing. Marketing compounding exposure and branding. Beyond that, there's other areas that are more subtle. You know, like I said before, you've got YouTube. So Google, if they see a YouTube video embedded in a blog post, they like that. It's one of many, many signals that they say this content is slightly better compared to other pieces of content that don't have a video. So we produce videos for our content now as well. You know, we have a whole little team going for that. So make sure I haven't forgotten any other my content marketing points in the article I wrote for this. Just a reminder, again, it's at yaro.blog, yaro.blog. I will put the link to the blog post, which will be a much more succinct version of what I'm saying today. Obviously, this is a podcast. I'm giving you a lot more words, a lot more backstory. You can read the short version on my blog. Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. I covered most of the main things there. Referrals, compounding SEO, compounding exposure through various content marketing channels, paid advertising, organic podcasts. So it all kind of helps that flywheel to start spinning a little faster, a little faster, a little faster. And of course, it starts to, you know, carry itself because all these things exist and they're permanent. Those podcasts are permanent. Those YouTube videos are permanent. Those blog posts, more and more are coming out, they're permanent. It's all connected. It's all helping to build exposure. But it takes time. A lot of this was slow build. We had to reinvest our profits back into growth. And that's just the challenge with the business. You know, I say seven figures and you might think, oh, wow, that's a $1 million a year business. But the truth of the matter is we pay a team, and not just the great team that delivers our services. We pay a management team that makes sure everything runs smoothly, the hiring, the client onboarding, client success over time. All these things really make the business work. And then the decision as founders is, what do we take for ourselves versus what do we put back into marketing to keep things growing? And that's a choice we make every month. we decide, okay, how much are we going to pay ourselves? What's our salary? We have the most variable salary. I spent 2 or 3 years making nothing growing a business. Now I'm getting a much better return because we have a bigger business, more cash flow, but there's still always that decision. Hey, I could take $10,000 and put it towards a whole new marketing method and see if that works. That's $10,000 less that I could make, but it could take us to the next level in growth. But we don't know because we don't know if that marketing method will work. So that's one of the biggest challenges I feel, especially for me as the CMO and the co-founder as well. Okay, I think that's pretty much it. So I'm going to start to, we'll wrap it up. We're at about 40 minutes now. Good time to stop this episode of the Yarrow podcast. So as I said, yarrow.blog, I'll link to the show notes for the written version of this. It's on YouTube as well, so I will upload the video version. It's going to my podcast feed, so you have three places to find this content. And the podcast, I will make sure to embed the audio and the video once it's all ready as well, so you'll find it all in one place there. That's pretty much it. I have a lot of these kind of things I want to share with you behind the scenes. Obviously, this one was an important thing for me to share as we reached this milestone of a seven-figure business. I felt it was a great time to review the marketing methods that worked for us. As I mentioned in the article, that doesn't mean this will work for you. I'm giving you guidelines from real-world experience, but your business is different. Your topics and niches and products and services are different. What will work for you might not work for me. Good chances it won't. Hey, cold email outreach or LinkedIn or Twitter ads might work great for you. We've got new things to experiment. I'm looking forward to expanding into other platforms. We still really haven't played around much with retargeting. Facebook, Instagram, newsletters. I'm really excited about possibly doing some newsletter sponsorships or getting into those newsletters organically. I really do feel like if we could get Inbox Done to appear in, say, Tim Ferriss's 5-Bullet Friday or some of the other big productivity newsletters out there, James Clear, Ali Abdaal, all these people have hundreds of thousands, I think even millions in the case of Tim, and that would potentially double or triple the size of our business just from that one exposure point. So I'm always looking for avenues to try and get our services recommended there. However, you know, if you want to do this through paid acquisition, so to sponsor, say, a Tim Ferriss newsletter and put money into that, I don't know what his current rates are, but I remember hearing him once, and it was several years ago, so it's probably more now. He was charging $30,000 just for one insertion into a podcast episode. So I have no idea what his rates are. Probably doesn't even do paid advertising in the newsletter. So, you know, the avenues are there as your budget increases, but I'd love to try and get into these platforms organically to spur our next phase of growth. So we're looking into all of that, as I'm sure you are as well. This is the job of the marketing manager, whoever's in charge of marketing at your company. Maybe it's you as the founder if it's early days. It's thinking about where to spend what resources you have, including time and money. Experiment. If something works, double down. If it doesn't, drop it quickly. That's my big advice. And look for compounding. That to me has been one of the best long-term outcomes. And you know, see it as a journey. It's not a 1 week or 1 month result. It's about seeing what is it in 6 months, in 12 months, how are things progressing over time. All right, going to wrap it up. My name is Yarrow. You can find the Yarrow podcast wherever you download your episodes from. Please hit subscribe. Would appreciate you following the show. I am going to be dropping these whenever inspiration strikes, whenever I have stories to share from behind the scenes of my business, or if I come across someone great who I'll have on as a guest interview. All right, that's it from me. I will talk to you very, very soon. Bye-bye.